You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
So AMP is a life insurance and retirement savings provider with over 4 million customers across Australia and New Zealand. In our country, AMP is one of the biggest financial advice networks with 240,000 KiwiSaver customers and a 12% share in the KiwiSaver market. 2 weeks ago, AMP began hearings with the Royal Commission in Australia after the Commission became aware that AMP had lied to Australia's corporate watchdog body for a decade. So much evidence came out in the first few days of hearings that AMP CEO stood down. The core focus of the hearings is that the company charged at least 15,000 customers for financial advice that was never delivered. As Rod and I discussed, one elderly widowed pensioner who was trying to save hundreds annually on her superannuation was told to put her savings into an investment scheme that charged her over $1,000 a year, and it would have taken her 14 years to break even.
In Australia, there's been this growing level of unease amongst consumers and some politicians for a long time. And quite fascinatingly, in the end, the Turnbull government initially said, no, we aren't going to do a Royal Commission. But in the end, it was the chairman of the four largest banks that said, no, we want a Royal Commission because we need to restore confidence and trust of the public in what we do. So that's the level of unease that had been reached. And there was an interesting moment of self-awareness on the part of the banks that they needed a Royal Commission to, you know, get this all out on the table and put things right and move on.
And so the main accusation is that AMP charged thousands of customers fees for advice that was never given. How much damage will this have caused?
Well, judging by some of the press I've seen in Australia since, quite a lot, the most cutting comment from one business commentator is, what's the point of AMP? You know, this is a financial services company that's considerably lost its way since it was once a great mutually owned insurance company. And then, crikey, way back in about the late 90s, it demutualized. It turned itself into a shareholder-owned company. It's substantially lost its way. So that's kind of the extreme end of the response. But this isn't good for AMP.
Will they still have a future?
In any corporate situation like this, it's usually possible to build back. I mean, this is not... there have been more egregious things that happened with companies. So, for example, you know, Volkswagen over a decade produced 11 million cars with software, diesel-powered cars with software to cheat on emissions tests, and it's costing them the thick end of about $20 billion in fines buying back cars. It goes on and on and on. But Volkswagen has just set a record sales. It hasn't entirely recovered its reputation in some quarters. But it's possible for companies to come back from worse disasters than this. But they need to be extremely active about setting a new course and new culture for the company and convince their customers very quickly that they're serious about that.
The resignation of the now former CEO on Friday, and he said that he wanted to restore trust of customers with AMP, and so it was time for him to step down. Do you think that is the reason?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Somebody needs to carry the can for this sort of thing. It's perfectly appropriate for the CEO to go.
Okay, so as opposed to him weaseling out of accountability, that is actually him taking culpability for what's happened?
Yeah. In situations like this, the company helps ease the pain of departure in various ways, financial and otherwise.
Right. And so AMP only started giving evidence to the Royal Commission last Monday, and the resignation had happened by Friday last week. Do you think that we can expect more to come out from here?
The way the Royal Commission is structured is there's sort of three big phases of hearings, and this was the second phase. And the third phase next month is about lending to the agricultural sector. Well, we know from problems that farmers have had with banks here with some products like interest rate swaps and various ways to try and hedge their interest rate risk, which has resulted in some court cases by farmers against the banks and some progress against the banks on that. And that there's probably quite a lot to come out in that area too. Now, it won't be so high profile because as big as the agricultural sector is in Australia, it's not the same as the whole mass consumer market for retail financial services. But something might come out of that. But I'm still would be slightly surprised, I think, if there were even one or two more resignations as this unfolds.
The example that I've seen used in a lot of places is one elderly widowed pensioner tried to save hundreds annually on her superannuation, and the advice that she was given was to put her $32,000 of savings into an investment scheme that charged her over $1,000 a year, and it would have taken 14 years for her to break even. Yeah. Is it mostly Australians who have been hurt by AMP's false financial advice, or has it happened in New Zealand too?
AMP in New Zealand has made it very clear that they run a different kind of business model in terms of the services they're offering, and it's under different regulation, and it's whilst part of the AMP group is run separately. So it's gone to great lengths to say that something like that wouldn't happen here, which has been their basic response. Overall, we've found that the response actually all the way through from the Reserve Bank and the government, from industry associations here, this view that, oh, it's different here in New Zealand because our financial services and banking industry works under different regulation, different type of regulation, its independence, a different culture and all the rest. But the fact is that the Insurance and Financial Services Ombudsman's Office had something like 314 complaints last year, which it investigated. But it found that none of them were systemic, they were, one-off issues. But then you sort of flick that round the other way and say, well, we don't know yet whether it was systemic within AMP in Australia that people like that elderly person were taken advantage of. So I think there's a fine line between a culture which pops up in various places of an organization and does a fair amount of damage along the way. And yet people say, well, that's not systemic. That's just some bad people who've gone off the rails. So I think we're just being a little bit too complacent here in New Zealand that we don't have any of these problems. It just intuitively doesn't feel quite right to me that that's the case. I think we're a long way short of getting some kind of government inquiry or Royal Commission. But there is a steady flow of complaints to ombudsmen or to regulators about things that go wrong here. So I just think the financial services sector is just being a little bit too complacent to say, oh, it's completely different here, culturally, regulatory and everything else. And it'll be very interesting to see once the Royal Commission process has worked its way through and big regulatory changes are expected in Australia, as to whether that will then have some knock-on effect on how we do regulation of the banking and financial services sector here in New Zealand.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.